Hello and welcome to The Gist. I'm your host, Chris Vetrano, here every week to break down all the things that are happening in pop culture and interviewing the people that make it pop. Today, I'm joined by a legend in the making. He's an award-winning, Emmy-nominated, drag race judging comedian, actor, and writer who you can catch starring in the brand new season of Loot alongside one Miss Maya Rudolph. Please welcome to The Gist, Joel Kim Booster. Hey, Joel.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing well. Legend in the making.
Legend in the making made me tee-hee a little bit. it's so interesting because I will say this, like you brought up Drag Race judging, and I will say I did peek into the internet and see what the response was. And it's so funny to me because I find the response to me when I pop up on things like Drag Race is usually at least 40% people being like, who is this person? Why is he on my screen? I don't know who this is. Why does he think he should be there? And it's funny to me because I'm at this point now with pop culture where I'm like, is there anyone who is famous anymore? You know, like like there are a handful of people that everyone in the world knows, but I do think it's so segmented now that like I will constantly be talking to someone, say in a different generation, and they'll be like talking about some person, and I'll be like, I've never heard this person's name in my entire life. I'll go and look them up, and they're 1,000 times more famous than I am. And it's so jarring to me because I'm like, I guess there is no monoculture anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that percentage has to be dwindling on you because you are truly like everywhere now. And I feel like with all the award shows and obviously Fire Island put you on the map in a completely different way. And then Apple TV Plus, like you're doing it. So I can't imagine that 40% of people watching, especially Drag Race, don't know who Joel Kim Booster is at this point.
You'd be surprised. Maybe I'm goosing the numbers a little bit, but that's just my interpretation of what I'm seeing out there right now.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear about Drag Race because I know you're such a Drag Race fan. Mm-hmm. And so getting to actually be a part of the panel, and you didn't just like show up. I feel like some of the judges just like show up the day of judging and they don't get a lot of camera time and they don't get their quips in. But you also got to like help with some of the contestants' sort of performances. Tell me, what was the experience like for you?
I mean, it was the best day of my life. it was so fun. I'm a huge fan of the show and drag in general. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I will say the like nerve-wracking thing about doing a show like that, or I suppose any reality TV, is you go in and like, you know, that workroom session that we did probably lasted like an hour.
Yeah.
You know, or close to it. And they, of course, cut it down to less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it's very surreal to watch it back and be like, oh, that's what they picked. And, you know, because I can talk and I said a lot of shit. so I'm not sure, you know. So, and of course, you forget it all immediately as soon as you leave the studio. So I've been spending the last 9 months wondering like, oh my God, what did I say? And then, of course, like watching the season, it's very jarring to be dropped into the middle of a season as a fan of the show and then walk into that workroom and not know who anyone is, what their arcs are, what the narrative is, who's the villain, who's the front runner, any of that information. I had no context. They don't give you very much context at all as a guest judge.
Which is probably smart. So, I mean, they're getting your like real kind of unbiased take.
Absolutely. And it was just strange. And then of course, you know, I started watching this season and I got to know and to see it all sort of like play out from the beginning. It was so interesting. And then it made me really nervous because I was like, oh no, like what did I say to these girls? Like, you know, I didn't want to like piss off the fan base by like critiquing the fan faves, you know? And at this point, you know, you start to see who those people are. And I was like, God, what did I say to Nymphia? You know, like the whole time, since the show has been airing. So I was very concerned, but very happy with the final edit ultimately.
Yeah, I'm so glad
I can finally talk about the show because the worst part about judging is that, especially so late in the season, is I haven't been able to talk about it with really anybody. I haven't been able to give my real opinions or anything like that with my friends, because anything I say is like a light spoiler, because I unfortunately did spoil a few things for my boyfriend, because I would just like offhand say something and then he'd be like, oh, so I guess Dawn was there when you were there. It's very tricky to talk about like who you think your, you know, tops are going to be or who you think the final four is going to be. I can't say that because I know who the top seven was. So it was very frustrating as a Drag Race fan to not be able to
talk
be
about
a part
it.
Of the discourse.
Yeah, no, I could imagine that. I think also you ended up sort of on this sort of controversial episode in a lot of ways, because I feel like the online reaction was probably bigger than what you experienced being there, especially being unbiased and kind of walking in. But so many people, from what I can see online, thought it was going to be Q's night. And so it was a bit controversial of like who the winner was. And I know that there's all kinds of like kind of speculation as to maybe like why, and that maybe Safira is coming up into a front runner kind of position and Rue is kind of like continuing to push. But in the moment, did you feel like Q was far and away better than everyone else, or was it kind of like clear?
Here's what I'll say is that I think I thought Plane and Q were really great. They had like the cleanest, tightest, most, I think I said they had the most joke-dense presentation of the three, and it was very impressive. But what I'll say is that like Safira, like It's just the charisma bomb is undeniable in the room. And when we talked about like not being able to take our eyes off of her, it's not just us zhuzhing her. I was not told by production to say that,
right.
You know, and I again came in with no context for Safira. It was just my initial reaction to her, which was this person has an energy that fills the room and is immediately apparent. And the thing is like, you know, I see a lot of people being like, oh, you know, Safira, you know, got tripped up on her words and Q and Jane didn't. And it's like, this is RuPaul's show, and RuPaul is always going to be interested in like a charismatic star quality, you know, she's very interested in the intangibles associated with like star power.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's always going to come down to that. And I think like, while I do think that Q and Jane had a really, really strong presentation as a whole, I think Safira did have, to my memory, like the most notable sort of individual performance. And they were, you know, if they were being judged on teams, absolutely Jane and Q all the way should have won. But because they were being judged as individuals, I do think, you know, Sphere deserved. But, you know, it's all so arbitrary. It's all like, it's all made up. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's a game.
Yeah.
So I have my feelings about it. But I'm also like, none of this is really gonna.
And you don't know like the end result now that you've been on the show.
Now I'm fully blind again, which is wonderful. I'm so excited to just be able to sit and watch the show as a viewer again, as just a normal gay guy at home, like everybody else.
Yes.
And that's very exciting for me.
And did you know in the moment, because I think obviously another sort of controversial take online was that the joke that everyone kind of like gravitated to in Jane and Q's performance around like the clips and the slides, that was something that Katya has like famously done on tour. Was that discussed behind the scenes, or did no one really know?
No, I don't think anyone was aware of that. And this is the thing about that joke is that like, I think we all like sort of like, we're like, ugh, that's such a good joke. But like, you have to understand there is an element of this that's like, we're all grading a little bit on the Drag Race curve here.
Of course. They're not comedians.
And the other thing is about that joke, I don't think there was joke theft happening. I think it was just parallel thought. Like if you're doing a PowerPoint presentation, like the slides, pictures of slides thing, like that, it's not like, it's not like the like most original joke in the world. Like a lot of people I'm sure have done that bit like it at work. I'm sure there is like some girl named Katie in HR at a startup who has had that bit in her presentation for years now, who is sitting at home fuming. Like, that it's now being attributed first to Q and now to Katya. Like, I don't think Katya, and certainly Katya is not going to, is going to care about this. Like she, if she's aware of this, I would pay truly $1,000 to you, the charity of your choice, because Katya is so unbothered, is, is, you know, we know each other a little bit. She would not be bothered by this at all. And I think she would also agree that like, parallel thought happens in comedy a lot, especially with jokes like this.
And I mean, what, to your point, it wasn't like super original, but I know that, you know, the gays can be a bit petty online. So,
Can they?
they will find something to bitch about. So, well, no, I mean, it was like great to see you on the show. And again, knowing that you were a fan, I think that's also part you in kind of what you were talking about, the intro too, is like, it's really fun as somebody who can watch and follow a Joel Kim Booster who we know like really is a fan of something that they're now getting to be a part of and see them now sort of living their dream, like sitting next to Rue and being like part of that panel. I mean, that's something like really fun to just watch as well. So it was really entertaining. And I, I thought it was a great episode and I thought you added a lot. I was actually kind of like, I feel like Joel should be maybe like a regular on the panel, like whenever these sort of like comedy things.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I would love to come back. I would love to come back for an actual stand-up challenge. You know, the PowerPoint stuff was fun. I actually think it was a fun idea for a challenge. And they all did, you know, great in their own ways. But like, I would love to really coach them on stand-up. And the funny thing is like, I always do this to myself when I'm in these environments. I took it so seriously when I was on set. I was like not concerned about being funny at all. I was like, no, I'm going to save a life today. Like I'm going to save someone's life with my advice and critiques. So like, especially in the workroom, I was just like, let's get in there. And I'm going to give them real notes. And like, it was giving like TA energy. Like that's what I was a TA in college. And that is what, that is, I like clicked back into that mode very quickly and was just like, let's get to work.
Yeah. I mean, and get to work is something that you must live by because as I was saying earlier, you are everywhere. And, you know, we've actually, I've been like working on getting you on the podcast for months. I think last year is when I like first reached out because I was like, we got to have him on for Fire Island. Like I was so, I loved the movie. I thought that it was like something that was like really special. I, you know, I think I talk about this a lot for any kind of like LGBTQ plus, programming that we have now is that it's, but it's really special for someone like me who grew up where, you know, I had to like bootleg videotape like Queer as Folk in order to see certain things. And now to be able to go on Hulu and kind of find like a whole genre of movies and things, it's really awesome. And it was such a fun movie because it truly just felt like it was a normal film, a more normal comedy about friends. And it didn't feel like it was like trying to hunker down and be this like movie with a message to the LGBTQ plus community, which is something that I feel like so many of those projects end up trying to do. But tell me a little bit about that. Obviously it was award winning and Emmy nominated. So you're getting your flowers for it. Maybe not the win, which I thought you should. But I would love to just hear kind of like what was the process like for you? And then I also want to talk about like, what are you working on next in that sort of same vein?
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy. Cause I feel like for that year when the movie came out, I talked about the process so much. And now that you've asked me this, it's all completely left my brain. But, it really was for me. I mean, it's funny. I think a lot of people, the majority of people before Fire Island, at least, knew me as a stand-up and were familiar with me primarily from like clips on YouTube, or social media or something like that that they'd seen of my stand-up. And so I think the expectations were quite low for the movie. And it's, which is funny because like I started, writing, you know, that was my main focus and passion for so long. I was a playwriting major in college, a theater major with an emphasis in playwriting, wrote a shit ton of plays in college, moved to Chicago to do storefront theater, wrote plays in Chicago for a while. And like, that was my like first love. And like, in fact, I even really, my dream in college, I was like writing these super dramatic overwrought plays. And I was like, I'm going to write on the wire. Like I'm going to be in the 6 feet under writer's room or whatever, like whatever, you know, is the, you know, the next 6 feet under, that's going to be me. And then I moved to Chicago and I started doing stand-up. And even in the early days, like of my plays, like people would come up and be like, that was so disturbing, but also very funny. And so that's when I started to get an inkling of like, oh, maybe like, you know, comedy is a thing for me. But yeah, it's funny because Fire Island is sort of like the first introduction I think people have to me as a writer, which I was really nervous about because, you know, I sold a couple of pilots that never went, you know, in the years leading up to it. And I was really proud that this is the first thing that I got made. And I think for me, what was really at sort of top of mind was just authenticity. And I wanted to tell a story about queer friendship and chosen family, and specifically really sort of pull from my friendship with Bowen and the experiences that we've had together, and really center that friendship in the movie. And I was really lucky that I had creative partners that were not pressuring me to make a movie that was... that would like talk down to straight people basically, like, or explain or educate straight people. You know, the studio definitely had notes and will I ever write another movie with voiceover narration ever again? No, I won't. Because it just opens the door for them to be like, just explain it in the voiceover. I love my movie. Obviously it's my child. I will always love it a little bit, but did I want so much voiceover in it? No,
that's interesting.
No, I didn't. But for the most part, Searchlight was really supportive of me just like telling my story and not being worried about like every reference getting, recognized by every single audience member. Because for me, like when I watch a movie or a piece of media that is about, or, especially by, you know, a different culture than, my own, I know when I'm being spoken down to, and I know when it is just going full speed ahead and saying like, it's your job to keep up. And I prefer that, you know, because it's like, yeah, sure, I might have to Google something every once in a while, but I prefer the authenticity rather than this sort of like watered down, presented on a platter, like version of someone's culture. And that was what I was hoping to do with Fire Island. And you know, I think people recognize that, and you know, I think that part of the reaction, the positive reactions to the movie, stem from that impulse to just like make a movie for us, and then other people will be able to enjoy it.
Right.
But I'm not worried about them. That they're not my main focus.
Yeah, and that really came across. I mean, it's interesting to hear you say it because it confirms. You know, not to, I won't put any other kind of films on blast, but I think that there were other films that sort of promised to be this sort of gateway into like gay culture in just sort of normal everyday movie in the theaters. And it did kind of exactly what you were sort of describing, in where it started sort of overly telling the viewer what they were watching, or overly trying to say like, we're representing all of these people, or this is funny because there's this like one sort of cameo from somebody that you recognize from like a very like gay world. And I think that what Fire Island was is exactly what you said, is like an authentic movie about friends. And that was all it was at its core, but it really spoke to, like, as I said, someone like me who didn't have like gay people on TV to go like, oh, I relate to this group of friends, or I could be a part of this group of friends, and there is a tribe for me out there. And so I think that you gave that, and I think that that's so awesome. And so are you writing more now? Or are you planning to do more?
Yeah. So I have Searchlight bought my second script. We're working on that right now. You know, this business, who knows? You know, I will believe that it is happening when I am standing on set.
Yeah.
That first day. But we're excited. We're, you know, meeting with directors right now and trying to work that out. But I'm really excited about this movie, and I'm really excited. And you know, a little anxious. It is that sophomore album syndrome sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder, like, you know, no matter what I do next, people will compare it and contrast it to Fire Island,
right?
For good or for ill. And so I wanted to do something a little different. This next movie is much smaller in scope. Mm-hmm. It's a quieter movie. It's still a comedy, but it is definitely a little bit more serious. It's a wedding. I think, like, you know, people see wedding comedy and I think they think like Bridesmaids. Mm-hmm. And I keep sort of correcting people and being like, no, actually, this is my Rachel getting married.
Oh,
it is that. Like a much more subdued movie than Fire Island was, which is like, for me, I'm like, God, like, this will never get made. But we'll see.
Yes. Well, I certainly hope so. And will you also, would you want to star in it as well?
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal right now. But ultimately for me, as I said, like I will always like put the writing first. Mm-hmm. And so if it comes down to like the studios, like we would rather have, you know, Andrew Scott play that role. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, absolutely get Andrew Scott in here. He's an amazing actor.
Yeah.
If that's what it takes to get this movie made, I would much rather have the movie made without me than not have the movie made at all. Awesome. But ultimately, I would like to be in it because I'm a narcissist, I guess.
Well, I mean, and yes, your arm does look bigger because of the babies.
Well, I think that for me, it is this thing of like, I can't. If I waited around for this industry to write roles that were interesting to me or that spoke to me, I'd be waiting forever because I'm just mm-hmm. not going to get called in for those. Like, I'm going to get called in for the gay assistant, and that's mm-hmm. fine. And I celebrate that, and I am very grateful to be employed as a playing a gay assistant right now. And there are a lot of fun versions of that out there. But I do feel like roles that I am well suited for are very few and far between when they come from the outside. And so, of course I'm going to, you know, do it myself.
Yeah. I mean, you're advocating for the genre, for the space to let people like you have more mm-hmm. of an opportunity. So why not take that opportunity while you're doing it? It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So I do want to talk to about, I mean, we talked Drag Race, but I know that you also just love reality TV in general. And so I want to get some of your thoughts. What are you currently watching in the reality TV space? I know some of them, but I want to hear kind of what is currently your obsession.
Yeah, so I mean, top of mind, top of list, Traitors. Traitors all day. They just dropped the first 6 episodes of UK season 2 Traitors, and I am so gooped and gagged.
Yeah, I saw you season. Like started posting about it. I'm like 3 in, so I was like, I can't read the rest of what he posted.
I'm not doing spoilers for it yet. I did that a little bit with Australia season 1, and I got the note. I was like I would be like posting like in real time too early, and I didn't realize like that. I mean, Australia season 1 especially, every episode is a hit, and every episode, like, you think, like, whoever you think the main character is, you're wrong. You know, right. Like, it just keeps changing. But yeah, UK season 2 is amazing. Some real twists and turns. Some incredible casting. Love Claudia. In the Bravo world, where I'm watching all the Housewives that are airing right now. Gave up on Vanderpump Rules. Watching Below Deck. And then we did dip our toe into season Love is Blind season 6.
Yeah, I keep being told that. Like, that's that's where I need to go. Is like, I've never watched.
It's pretty good. I mean, the show literally could be renamed Are Straight People Okay? It is, you know, I fundamentally disagree with the premise of the show.
Right.
And I actually, but here's the thing, like, I actually think that there's a really interesting, like, sociological documentary that could have happened there, where it's like, yes, let's introduce a lot of people who can't see each other and see if they can build a connection without any physical attraction. That's totally interesting and above board. But then to force them to get married after a month later,
yeah,
that's where it's like, okay, well, then it becomes crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, it's a perfectly respectable idea and experiment. But then to force these people to get married or break up is, yeah, you know, it's nuts. And it's the greatest trick the show plays on us. And like, kudos to these editors and producers on Love is Blind, is that they convince us that the people who get to the altar and say, actually, I don't think I'm ready to get married to you yet because I've known you for a month.
Yeah.
They are the villains. And it's like, no, those are the normal people.
Yeah.
Those are the people who understand like how life works. And yet I'm sitting there as a viewer on the couch being like, how dare you? And it's amazing TV in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I need to get into it. I think that it's, have you seen, you were making me think of Couple to Thruple?
People keep putting this in front of me. Okay. And I have not dived into that show yet. I, you know, believe it or not, I did just list an innumerable amount of reality television shows, but there is a finite sort of level that I can get to before, yeah, my brain will become permanently mush. But yeah, I think Couple to Thruple sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy watch. It's like, I think, 8 episodes. But
okay.
And I think they're pretty
then
short.
I have a flight to Australia coming up, so maybe I'll just mainline it on my flight.
I won't say anything then so that you can watch it with surprise. But I feel like I'd be curious if you feel similarly to the Love is Blind kind of what you walked through about, you know, they know these people for a month and all of that. And it's just kind of like, oh, you get to this, the end, and you're like, wow, we're making some tough decisions after a month,
right,
of knowing everybody.
It would just be, I would love Love is Blind. I mean, I love Love is Blind as it is because it's a mess and it creates a lot of interesting, you know, it's an interesting peek into the psychology of a certain kind of straight person in different cities. But like, if they just let them out of the pods and said, go date now, I'd be like, that's interesting. You know, like, that's respectable. I get that. But like, let's be real. Like, I, and the other thing about Love is Blind that is so funny to me is that like, there is a superiority that people have around like, well, I fell in love sight unseen. And the fact that you had to see your partner first,
right,
makes your love less than. And it's like, no, actually, physical attraction is a huge component to compatibility long term.
Yeah.
And the couples that sustain from Love is Blind are clearly into each other physically. Like, right, they got lucky, yeah, in that regard. And the couples that don't make it, oftentimes it comes down to that.
Right.
And that does not make them bad people or shallow people. It is, you should be attracted to your partner.
Right. And ultimately, the show wants more of the people that aren't going to, that they're, yeah, going to develop.
I'm grateful that this show wasn't around in like 2003, mm-hmm, when reality TV was very evil in a different way than it's evil now.
Yeah.
Because you know they would put in people that like, they just, in order to humiliate them at, yeah, the end,
it's like the
physically. I think Love is Blind actually does a pretty good job of like, the people they cast are all, you know, they're all sevens, you, right, know, for the most part, you, yeah, know? And I think like that is a kindness to everyone involved in the pods, because I'm rarely worried about like, you know, full on mismatches or humiliation. Like, it's just like, sometimes people just aren't into each other.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you got to kind of level the playing field to make it, mm-hmm, feel like worth watching, or at least watching beyond.
Yeah, they're not interested in humiliating people, I don't think, or at least not in the that way.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real, like reality TV producers aren't very interested in humiliating people, yes. but in subtle ways that they can sort of avoid blame and dodge the bullets for.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the housewives. I'm curious what your take is on sort of the state of the union of our housewives, because a lot of people, especially after some of our, you know, we had this incredible Salt Lake City reality Von Tees, and, you know, we had some big other sort of major moments with like Erica and the legal battles. And now I feel like viewers are starting to say like, oh, this is their flop era, but I just keep hearing it over, like everyone's saying Potomac's in its flop. But then we're also not getting a lot of them picking up production as fast as they usually do. And I am not sure if it's because producers are scrambling and they're saying we've got to retool all of these things, or if they're just kind of giving us a little less because there is so much to sort of chew on in terms of reality programming.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what's going on with Bravo and the scheduling of the waves of releases here. I mean, listen, I think that Reality Von Tees Salt Lake certainly was a high, and, yeah. And it marks a very specific epoch mm-hmm. in the Bravo verse. But I think it's too soon to tell if it was sort of the peak or the beginning of something great.
Right.
Cause I mean, and it's hard because like Potomac is in its flop era. It is a bad season. I am still watching it, but nothing is happening. And it's so unfortunate because Potomac used to be my favorite franchise.
Right.
Those ladies used to be my favorite people to hang out with. Those are my friends.
Right.
And I would look forward to seeing them every week. But it is just unfortunate. And I said this on Watch What Happens Live, when they will not film together, when they will not yeah. play ball, it is just, it's untenable.
Yeah.
It's untenable. You are at work. Mm-hmm. I can't go to work and say, I don't want to work with X person.
Right.
If it's so bad that I can't go to the Quiznos line and stand next to Kelsey and make sandwiches with her, then I have to leave Quiznos.
Right.
Not Kelsey.
Right.
You know, like you can't. That's how jobs work. And yeah. I'm in the camp with the housewives, and I know that this is not everybody's POV on housewives, but it is for me, like they are all coworkers. They are not at this stage of housewives. Most of them are coworker friends
right.
at best, you know, they clock into the drama factory every day and they go to work with these ladies. And like, yes, a lot of them are friends, but like, a lot of people have work friends, you know,
yeah.
and like it's their job. And when you see it as sort of like a workplace comedy, like I do, it gets to be even more frustrating when you have situations like Potomac where the ladies just like will not move forward with each other. And,
yeah.
and they're misunderstanding the assignment a little bit, for me, at least anyways, in this era of housewives. So Potomac, concerned, don't know how to save it. I think the thing is that like you have to chop off one of the dangling limbs, which is like you either go get rid of Candace and Wendy or you get rid of the Green Eyed Bandits.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm on record as being a Candace stan. I love
yeah.
Candace. She's probably in my top five. So I would lean more towards that direction. Do I think she can hold the center of the show? I'm not sure, but I think that's why you keep Karen, who can definitely.
Right.
I build the show around those two.
Yeah. I mean, I do know that you're a Candace stan. And so I was interested in your take because I feel as though Candace is the one that is like, I'm not going to film. I'm not going to play. And so
I think that's true with Candace and Robin. I think Giselle is the stopgap in Candace and Giselle context. I agree with you. I am actually like frustrated with Candace this season, as I am frustrated with all of the women on that
yeah.
franchise this season, because I do think that like there were certain moments where she could have probably gotten to a better place with Robin. And listen, I'm no great Robin fan. And do I think that like she owes her friendship? No, but like for the sake of television, I think like you sort of have to move forward. And I think Candace, it's not as egregious as certain other housewives have done, but I do think Candace is feeling her oats a little bit, and she knows that she has a lot of power now as a fan favorite for a lot of people. And I think that in that power, she's saying, I don't have to play ball with Robin if I don't want to.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we've seen bigger falls. We've seen like people come into seasons high on their own supply, and that really trips them up in much bigger ways. I don't think Candace is on like a Heather Gay level or a Leanne Locken level, you know, like people who had really great seasons and then came in the next season and sort of, you know, tumbled because they were a little too confident in their status as fan favorites. But I do think that's a little bit what's happening here.
Yeah. And would you, speaking of Heather Gay, would you have brought back Monica?
It's tough. I get where they're coming from. I'm sort of aligned with Andy on this, where I think a pause is necessary.
Yeah.
I think like it's too hot. It was too hot. It was too toxic. It was too visceral to deal with. I don't think anybody really wanted to see the fallout play out on TV. I think we would have been exhausted. I think it would have been too much. I think we needed a soft reset. Like, yes, it was amazing. Yes, Monica probably had one of the best rookie seasons of any housewife in the history of the show. But I do think we need to sort of reset, and then she can stomp the boards, you know, and come back in a season or two like Danielle Staub, and really shake things up. And I don't think we've seen the last of Monica. I hope not. But I understand where the ladies are coming from, and I think they're too in their feelings. Again, it would just be too I don't think it would be a good season if a lot of the women were refusing to shoot with Monica. And unfortunately, you know, I say this a lot about the housewives, especially in regards to Traitors, where people think that the housewives are not a reality competition show. And I think that that is wrong. I think that it is very much a reality competition show. The prize money is their paychecks, and they don't have the benefit of a tribal council to vote people out. They have to do it in much more strategic ways to get people off the island. And unfortunately, I think Monica fell victim to that this year. She was definitely sort of pushed off the island for sure. As we've seen with other, you know, women before, but I just don't think any of them would have played ball. And so it would have been a bad season.
Yeah. I think that I think one of the mistakes that they made is that they didn't give Monica a one-on-one in the reunion. And I think that because they went into, as you were just saying, this is how they would have gone into the season, is they were so visceral towards her that they were all like, anytime she opened her mouth, it was like someone was screaming obscenities at her to like shut up. And so all she could do was go kind of like street, which is like her sort of defense.
When she's backed into a corner, it gets very, you see her at like 15.
Yeah.
You see who she, you know, and like, I said this on Watch What Happens, but like, I'm glad that they included so much with her mom so that we kind of got it.
Yeah.
You know, we had context for why she behaves this way or where it's coming from.
Yeah. And I think in a one-on-one, she could have also done the same thing, is like talked about her mom and then talked about her relationship with Jen Shah and why they were going after her the way that they were with the account, and that it really wasn't about the other ladies. It was more to expose things that Jen Shah said. And even though I think, you know, Heather and I think Lisa made this point very clear several times of like, you were still posting it. So even if she was saying it behind the scenes, you were the one putting on the internet for thousands to see. But it was like, I felt like she might have been able to have a little bit of a softer moment if it was one-on-one, that she could have just explained herself to Andy. The ladies had to watch it. And then she could have kind of like approach it more with an apology, but it
I think that probably would have been really, it's crazy that they gave Brooks the benefit of that but not Monica.
Right.
Like really truly wild. Like give Monica like a Watch What Happens slot on her own at the very least, you know. And you have heard the rumor that she was spotted filming with Whitney.
Yeah, I saw that maybe she was, and then I saw maybe people said that was just like left from last season on the cutting room floor.
Oh, okay. But I do think Whitney is her way back in.
Totally.
I think Whitney is her way in for sure.
And I think producers know that too. So it would be smart of them to try to facilitate some kind of sit down. Because I do think, as you were saying, like with any friendship or even with like Candace and Giselle, it's like we do need an arc. We do need to somehow come to resolution. And like even, you know, on Beverly Hills, it's like, why was Kathy at the reunion? I have no idea. I still don't know. I don't understand it. But I also am like, well, they kind of wanted to wrap up that like where Kyle and Kathy landed after this really horrible sort of ending last season. I feel like they wanted to wrap up that story, have Kathy there, probably for some other reasons too, to sort of like speak her mind about some of the things that happened throughout the season. And then maybe setting her up to make some kind of return next season.
It'll be interesting. I mean, since we're here, let's talk about Beverly Hills. Yeah. I wonder if Kyle will come back. There is a part of me that really wonders, because she was going on and on about how much she wanted to move to the wilderness with her dogs this season. And clearly, Morgan does not love the association, after her brief appearances. And there's clearly something going on there. And so I wonder if there's a world where Kyle chooses Morgan or chooses that life and wants to step away for a while. I mean, Andy loves her. Mm-hmm. She is probably Andy's like number one at this point. I really do think they're quite close. And so I think the door will always be open for her. And if Kyle wants to come back, Kyle will be allowed to come back. And like post separation, I think like obviously there's a lot of story there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know if I need another season with Kyle.
I think that like Kyle would be smart to go the Candy route and say like, I've done this and I like want to take a break, But I think that the thing I'm not sure of with Kyle is we've also got the Buying Beverly Hills, and that's about to air with more story about the separation. From the clips and the way that they're previewing it, it seems like we're talking way more about it on that show than we did on Beverly Hills, and Kyle's on it. And so I think we've got to also decide, I mean, and even producers of Beverly Hills need to say, like, are you telling the story over there? Or are you going to tell the story over here? And, you know, we have to assume that audiences are only going to pick one, even though they know we won't.
Exactly. I do think even Kyle might sort of sense this too. It does feel like the show is sort of, you know, Kyle was the center of that show for 10 seasons or so. I do think it's starting to shift over to Sutton and Garcelle little bit more.
Totally.
I think that's the tide is turning. And I think that she is sensing that. I think that Erica sensed that. That's why Erica is sort of, you know, going to dinners with them now. Yeah. And I think Dorit senses that. I don't think we'll see Dorit again for a minute. I think this was sort of her swan song. They would be smart to sort of maybe take a look at building the show around Sutton and Garcelle next season and seeing what that feels like. And if they're able to do it carry that burden of being the center of one of these shows. Yeah. I think they could. I think the audience is ready for that. I think Kyle's story right now is just, I don't know. I'm not that interested.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people have said like Kyle's trying to push Teddy on us, and Kyle's like pushing kind of her agenda now. And I think that's always a sign too of when like, and I mean, some people were like, you know, she doesn't have to claim anything with the relationship with Morgan. But at the same time, she also can't force Denise Richards to talk about what happened with her and Brandy if she's not willing to go there as well. And so I think that like, that was to me some of the writing on the wall too, of her being like, I'll show up to the reunion, I'll say what I want to say, and what I want to say is it's no one's fucking business, and I might want to just move to the woods, and like maybe I need to really consider if the show's for me. I think that's her saying like, maybe this isn't for me anymore, because I'm not willing to put all of that stuff out there the way that I once was.
Yeah. And it is the central conflict of these shows, right? Is like, are you going to be real or are you going to be produced? And I think you know, she's gotten away with murder for many seasons. And I just think that a lot of the audience is really tired of it.
Yeah, I think that's why she had a really tough sort of reunion the year prior, and then coming into this sort of season with the separation and all the things. Like, yeah, I think it's just, this might be her time to pause. Are you excited to hear about Portia back on Atlanta?
Very excited. I think, you know, Portia's great. She's fantastic. I did a live Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me for NPR where Portia was the guest in Atlanta. And I remember at the top of the show, the audience was very cold on the idea. This NPR audience was very cold on the idea of a housewife being the guest on this beloved NPR, very serious, you know, like we're NPR, we're intellectuals. How dare you have a housewife on the show? Yeah. And the audience did not like it when it was mentioned at the top of the show. And then of course, Portia comes out and it was amazing. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen to see Portia Williams turn this audience that had previously sort of turned their noses up at her. Yeah. And just charmed the fucking daylights out of these NPR weirdos. Yeah. And it was magical. So I'm really, I think she will bring the energy that show needs. Cause talk about a show that really needed an overhaul. Mm-hmm. So I think Portia is coming to save the day, and I'm excited to see who some of the new ladies they're going to cast are. You know, there was like rumors that they were going to go the New York route and sort of do a complete reboot. Right. And I'm, you know, I'm glad that they didn't do that only because they're bringing Portia back. Like, had they brought back, I don't know who else would have even come. You know, NeNe deleted a lot of her anti-Bravo posts.
Right.
So there was a lot of rumors that maybe NeNe was, you know, mea culpa, let's come back to the table, which that would be also, I'm down for.
Well, you'd end up with Atlanta legacy, which is what they kind of were trying to do with New York. And I think that could be kind of genius, honestly, to kind of bring, but now NeNe's coming after Portia and saying like, she's not a star. Yeah. She's just a housewife. So it seems like maybe if there were conversations happening, those might have like gone cold. I'm excited for Atlanta. I'm glad that we're picking up cameras again and that we're talking about the cast, because when I heard it was like paused, I was starting to panic a little bit because I was like, why is nobody filming right now? Like the New York hadn't filmed. Now we're hearing New York is picking up cameras. Rumors are that they're all coming back, including Jenna, which I think is the big
shocker. That's crazy to me. That is absolutely insane to me, because especially like after the BravoCon stuff, like she seemed clearly not interested in being a part of that world anymore.
My only thought is I've heard like they're bringing back the whole sort of clan, but adding two more. And I'm curious if that was their way in with Jenna and said, you get to like, we're going to bring people center like around you that like are more in your sort of circle. Because I always felt like Jenna just didn't fit in the circle.
Yeah, and she was sort of an island. I can't believe they're bringing Psy back either. It's really strange to me. I fell victim to the rumor that it was going to be a mix of old and new.
Right.
Which maybe. I still think, you know, could happen. I have a friend who was in the vicinity of a Luann, and she was being very coy about the possibility of her popping up on this season of New York. And I will say, this is real tea. I saw Jessel and Uba at Fashion Week in New York at the Christian Cowan show. And we met and we were chatting, and I was like, I hear, you know, you guys are back. And Jessel sort of winked at me, and Uba from behind her was like, no, we don't know anything. We don't know anything. We absolutely have no information. And Jessel gave me this look of like, oops. Like, it seems like they were aware for a minute at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they've been trying to figure out, and I would love to see some of our old mixed with the new. I think that Ultimate Girls Trip legacy, I think, fell flat.
Yes, the thing about the girls' trips, unfortunately, you know, sort of start high and then always end low, because yeah. there's just no way to really, none of them have totally stuck the landing for me. Mm-hmm. And it's just because it sort of just fizzles out. Yeah. But I will say the thing about Legacy that my big takeaway is that I went and rewatched season 6 of New York, mm-hmm. Kristen's first season. And people forget Kristen was first chair. She was yeah. next to Andy that first season.
Yeah.
She had a really, she was a really interesting archetype that I don't think the show had ever experimented with before her, and then tried to replicate in many other places
yeah.
and sort of failed. And I think that she even had a fine season 7. And I think, you know, I have it on good authority that Bethany wanted her gone, and so she was gone. Mm. And that's really unfortunate. Justice yeah. for Kristen Takeman, I say. I would say throw her on Beverly Hills. She's in LA now.
Yes. Yes. And I've heard a lot of people say that. I think that that would make total sense, because she was brought in as kind of this, like, Brandy had done so well mm-hmm. on Beverly Hills. So they, and then she knew Kristen. And so they brought her, and she was first chair. And it was like, she kind of seemed like she was maybe the future of where the show was headed. But yeah, then suddenly she was gone after what I thought was, like, fine. I thought that maybe she was gone because of stuff that was going on with her husband, and
Bethany really robbed us of the Ashley Madison happening in real time on yeah. camera. So yeah. thank you for that, Bethany. I'm sure Kristen's very glad to be gone, but Kristen was sort of the first, like, hot audience surrogate. Mm. You know, like mm-hmm. Brandy was not an audience surrogate. You know, she was young. She was like a young housewife, which is we had seen before. But Kristen really was like the normal one right. in season 6 in a real way. Yeah. And sort of the audience's way in. I know this because my boyfriend, who hates the housewives, would sort of watch some of season 6 with me and be like, I relate to that one. Yeah. I like, she seems normal. I get her. And I was like, this was their sort of evangelism, what was yeah. through Kristen. She appealed to a different kind of viewer, I think.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Well, I also wanted to get just sort of, because I knew Traitors was something that you were very into.
Oh, yeah.
I've been obsessed with it. I've had to, like, pause a lot of the other viewing just so I can prioritize all the countries, all of the seasons. Season 3 is being casted. Like, since you are kind of a fan of, you know, the drag races, the housewives, like, who would you like to see, like, definitely show up on a Traitor season 3?
I would like to see, you know, it's interesting. I actually know a few people on season 3. I'm obviously not going to say, but, like, it is a lot of people that said no to season 2 because they had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And now, of course, because, I mean, you can thank you Phaedra Parks for really yeah. I think sort of memifying that show into the public consciousness yeah. in a real huge way, but I think a lot, they're going to be able to get a lot of heavy hitters this time around, because a lot of people who said no to season 2 are saying yes to season 3 because they're like, oh, this is a thing. This yeah. is a thing that people watch and love. And so with that in mind, I would like to see, obviously, I mentioned it before, Monica, I think would be amazing. A real train wreck on that show in a fun way. In terms of the housewives, I would like to see, you know, Portia, I think, would be great. Give a really fun energy. I yeah. think from New York, Dorinda would again be incredible. I mean, talk about someone who would feel so personally betrayed by being lied to
yes.
By a traitor.
Dorinda
would lose her mind
yeah,
if she was lied to at round table. Oh my God. Dorinda at a round table? Give it to me now.
Yeah.
I want it now.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dorinda would be sort of top of my list. And I guess it would be sort of interesting to see, I don't know, somebody from Beverly Hills. I'm trying to think of, Rinna would be interesting, I guess. Yeah. Erica would be certainly something. But yeah, more housewives. I think we need more than just one Drag Race girl. And I think we need one of the more strategic girls. I yep. think, like, look at the villain pool, look at the girls who, or the winners pool. Honestly, I think Bob would be amazing on that show. I think he would be really excellent in either role. I think you could go chaotic. I think Alyssa Edwards would be really amazing to see on that show. I think somebody like, you know, a Mistress Isabel Brooks would be, if we're going recent, would be very interesting on Traitors. But yeah, those would be some of my top selects. I want them to, you know who actually I want to see on Traitors, especially after watching UK season two? That mom and son duo from the Squid Game reality show. Which, by the way, if you haven't watched the Squid Game reality show, I know it's a tough sell, but it is truly one of the greats. I loved every second of it.
Okay, but that
mom and son duo would be great on the Traitors.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I've seen like clips or memes and things from it, so I will add that to the list because I would love that. I think for me, one duo that I'd love to see, because we were robbed of Alex McCord back on our screens, and I would love to see Alex McCord back on Traitors and put her against Luann. And I feel like there would be this like tension between the two of them that we would, that would give us kind of that legacy that we were hoping for. And
We absolutely need some Jersey presence, whether it be a Teresa or a Danielle Staub, or somebody needs to say in a confessional, "I'm from Jersey. I know how to smell a rat." You know, like that is like a direct quote. I guarantee you we would hear if there was a Jersey housewife on that show.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like we could get Joe. I mean, we could get like one of the husbands on, and I think would just be equally as compelling TV to watch. Well, speaking of TV to watch, Loot season two is out now. Tell me, like, how was it going into this second season? I feel like when I haven't watched the second season yet, but the first season, the budget just looks incredible. I mean, there's like, it's so massive. The shots are gorgeous. And then it's, of course, hilarious. And you and Maya and the whole cast is just incredible. But tell me a little bit about the season two. Give me the gist.
I mean, for me, I think season two is, we just had so much more fun. I love season one. Obviously, we had a lot of fun. But the thing with comedy is it really benefits from time spent with these characters. And, you know, in the age of a 10 episode order, that can be a little bit difficult because you have to spend a lot of your time getting to know them and setting them up and understanding what the comedic sort of game is for each character before you can really just like hit the ground running with the comedy. And so and that's a lot of prestige comedies on TV now. Yeah. But season two, you know, all of those things are set up. Everybody knows who these characters are. They know their relationships. And so we were really able to just like dive right in. And I think it's a much more joke dense season. I think it's a sillier season. You know, we get to switch up. There's still a lot of me and Ron. Obviously, that friendship is still a big part of the show. But I get to spend a lot more time with Maya this season. I get to spend a little time with MJ. You know, we're sort of switching up the pairings and you know who gets to play with who. And so it's a lot of fun. And I really think that season two we really hit a stride in a way that. You know, season one for, you know, as much as I love it, I think we had to set a lot of stuff up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being free of that was just, it was just so much fun to be able to just be a comedy.
Yeah. Well, in Apple Plus TV, like they, or TV Plus, they have, they've been not the like first with like, they had the morning show. They had like a couple of like key sort of shows, but they weren't giving as much content. And so I feel like people didn't catch on as much. And then I feel like when Loot season one came out, there was just a ton of programming that they like added all at the same time. So I think it took people a little time to like catch on to it too. And, but like, people that have stuck with it. I watched the whole first season. I think it's great and very excited about season two. I was glad to see that like they're bringing some of these shows back, because there was some other that came out around the same time that I was like, I wonder if that's going to come back or if that was just kind of a one and done. And I'm seeing a lot of these shows coming back, which I think is amazing, because to your point, like, we need to invest in these characters and the character development. And I think that that's what they're doing with their programming really well. So excited to hear that. And then what else can you tell us that you're working on? What's next?
So I am, when does this come out?
April 4th, which I think is, so
April 4th. Yeah. So, I mean, if you have listeners in Melbourne, I will be in, when this comes out, I will have 4 days left in Melbourne performing stand-up comedy at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, which I'm really excited about. It is, Melbourne, one of my favorite cities in the world. And the festival especially is so great. And, lots of amazing, funny people to be seen there. And yeah, stand up is, that's sort of the thing right now. Working on the movie, I am, you know, sort of producing a few shows that I'm trying to sell right now, and then writing shows of my own that I'm trying to sell right now. It is not an easy time to sell television in Hollywood post strike. Yes. But yeah, it's just a lot of planting seeds that hopefully will bear fruit in 2025.
Amazing. Well, yes. And then where can people find you so that they can get, you know, tickets if they're in Melbourne, stay up to date with your dates, and then, you know, also just,
yeah. So I hate Joel Kim on, yeah, I hate Joel Kim on Instagram and Twitter for now. Although I think I'm leaving Twitter soon. I got to get off. Yeah. I think I'm just going to do a Substack where I talk about reality TV, and that will scratch the itch for me.
Yeah,
no, because that talking about reality TV on Twitter is that's the only part of Twitter that brings me joy at this point.
And you don't,
but
the TikTok.
I hate Joel Kim on those places. And then I guess Joel Kim Booster, all one word, on TikTok, but I don't use it very much. But maybe I'll learn how to do it.
Yeah, you can also just talk about reality TV live there.
True. Very true.
Yeah. Well, it was a pleasure to have you on here and talk to me. I mean, these are my favorite things to talk about, and I've heard you talking about them before. I follow you. So obviously, what a joy to have you on today and get to hear all of your opinions firsthand. And thank you for spilling the tea. I am going to be very, thinking very carefully about now, who do you know that is going to be on season 3 of The Traitors. So I can't stop thinking about it. But when the cast announce comes out, I'll probably slide into your DMs and be like, okay, now tell me, who did you know? But thank you so much for doing this today. And we will definitely be following all that you do, because like I said, living legend. And here we go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And for all of you out there, thanks so much for listening. Tune in next week. More interviews to come and more pop culture news. So thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, rate and subscribe. I'm at CM Vetrano on all the socials, and we will talk soon. Bye.